Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Later in the hour, we talk with naturalist and Cape Cod Notebook contributor Dennis Minsky about his latest collection of essays titled Peculiar and Superior, a Year-Rounder in Provincetown. But first, We Are the Land is a community devised play that shares the Wampanoag experience through story, dance, and spoken word. 10 years in the making, the play was first performed in Plymouth, UK in April of 2023, and later in Boston at the Cutler Majestic Theatre in partnership with Arts Emerson. We Are the Land comes to Cape Cod April 30th and May 1st at the Tilden Arts Center in Barnstable. Joining us to talk about the show is Siobhan Brown, citizen of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe and director of We Are the Land. Welcome.
Kunipion Katapatash. Thank you.
And Troy Currency is a citizen of the Herring Pond Wampanoag. Hello to you.
Hey, how are you?
Good. All right, so Siobhan, We Are the Land, 10 years in the making. Walk us through this timeline, starting with where the idea was first conceived.
Well, I came on board after that conception. So I think it was just a few years before 2020. Originally, it was to be part of the Plymouth 400 celebrations, and the pandemic canceled a lot of those events. A lot of the plans were shifted. So once the shift happened after the pandemic, I was voluntold to be involved around by my elders around 2022, 2021, 2022.
Yeah. When did you get involved?
I was a part of the original story that she talked about before COVID hit. I volunteered, to try to get other people engaged in different things like that. I thought it was a good project to tell about who we are as a people now. And I think it's important for people to hear our story.
Yeah. So it's described as a community-devised play. So give us a window into the creative and collaborative process of creating the play.
Sure. Community-devising is a way of doing theater that is informed by process, right? So the process is just as important as the product. And usually with community devising, the folks who are involved in the process are actually performing the piece. So it's a very specific space that we hold where, it's really rooted in circle practice, which is an indigenous principle where voices can come in and are heard. And we try things on. If it doesn't feel right, we try something else. We repeat and revise. Everyone is sort of responsible for lifting up the story. Mm. And so there were moments where I would come with an idea and, the cast would be like, you know what? I don't think I want to do that. Right? And, I think the traditional theater that I was trained in, the role of director is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is just a disperse of that power amongst everyone who is involved.
Right.
So and an absorption of everyone's point of view. And when everyone is sort of locked into the same idea, it allows for their unique expression to come into play because everyone, there are many different pathways to the same creative execution of an idea. And so that allowed for our rehearsal process to be one that where we did do a lot of research. There was a lot of dramaturgy involved where we brought in information about the different points in history that we were touching on. And then we would just open it up to discussion. I would just write down everything that was being said in the room. We had, young people, elders, a lot of, just historians.
Yeah. How nice, though, too, to hear like, hey, why didn't I think of that, right? I mean, the ideas that would come from that kind of collaboration.
Yep.
So the story at the heart of We Are the Land reflects what it means to be Wampanoag from both individual and collective experiences. And there were citizens from multiple tribal nations contributing to the story. Talk about the process of getting consensus among the creators and later the performers about how the story would be portrayed.
Well, everyone's worried about consensus, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get consensus on anything nowadays,
I know.
Right?
Yeah. These days, we're quite divided. I mean, I know for me as a holder of space, I don't necessarily get afraid when there's conflict. Conflict is where, like, where, you know, on the other side of it, the beauty comes forward, right? Conflict comes up because we're human, right? And so when there is just a baseline of understanding, you know, group agreements about how to function, we can absorb conflict, we can work with conflict. It can be one of our greatest gifts. And I think having tribal members from different tribes was a beautiful perspective, because the Wampanoag Nation at its height was very, very large, over 69 tribes and bands, yeah. mm-hmm. all along the eastern seaboard of now known as Massachusetts. You right. know, this is where we come from. So having, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, folks from Herring Pond, having folks right. from Aquinnah, their voices coming in, we had to have a process that was rooted in listening and then sit down and write. And often, you know, we would write, you know, scenes come in just to give a framework, and then the actual actors would go off and rewrite it. And it would be the same premise, but it would be language that would fit them yeah. and would fit them well.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? Yeah, because I guess as tribes, you might have some differences, but you have a lot in common.
We have a lot of similarities. There's a lot of us intermarried anyway, so mm-hmm. we're distant relatives, and that's how I approach, and that's how I suggest we approach other villages mm-hmm. to make up that nation that left behind that was still intact. And I think that's our commonality, and that we come together as a people, because we're all intermarried and we're all relatives when you get down the road. Mm-hmm.
So describe how shared history and experience is kept and passed down within tribal communities, and how that process differs from dominant culture.
We tend to have a lot of stories mm-hmm. passed down from elders or different people who have, you know, younger people who've been around elders, and they share that. We do a lot of shared experiences. Orally, of course, so it's different. It's not centered in power, I guess. It's more like a shared responsibility and obligation. I guess that's what I would say. I'm trying to think of exactly how to say it. You know.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah,
makes sense.
And I think that the relationship across generations is really important. Like, we're all tasked. Mm-hmm. To leave an impact on this world that will be felt by the next seven generations, mm-hmm. and so I often hear
I love that, not yeah. the next generation, the next seven to follow.
Wow. Yeah.
So
yeah.
that what that requires is dreaming, visioning, imagining, listening and responding to instincts inside, right? That come from right now, but also our ancestors that are mm-hmm. informing how we move in the world. So that listening piece is so important. I think through oral tradition, you know, our songs are not written down. How mm-hmm. to do our dances is not written mm-hmm. down. All of that is absorbed through, we're sensory beings. So all of that is absorbed through our senses and through mm-hmm. our deep listening.
And to build on what Savon said, the next seven generations. So, like, in the dominant culture, it's instant gratification. It's right now. For us, it's like, this is the best decision now, but how will this impact the next seven generations coming after us? And so that's where we kind of think longer. And you hear the term Indian time, and it's taking the time to make a broader and better decision for the group of everyone not present in that room or in space, but further on down the line.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes it's difficult.
Yeah, sure. How did you think about the audience as the play was developed? And if you had a particular audience in mind, how did that influence the content of the way the story was told?
Well, I rooted the process, I think, myself, other, you know, collaborators who were part of that creative team that was sort of taking care of all the admin stuff and, you know, holding the rehearsals myself, Kitty Hendricks-Miller, Michelle St. John, and Hartman Dietz. You know, we all agreed right away that we would focus on our voice first. And, the role of director in the theater is, that's really the only person in the room who's responsible for the audience, in my opinion, the way that I approach theater. if I'm acting, I'm not thinking about the audience because the director has mm-hmm. that audience experience, you know, to right. take care of. My responsibility is to center my work on the truth of the character and their journey through the story, or multiple characters, mm-hmm. you know, to be as authentic in the moment. And that's what I tried to encourage. I think Troy can attend, can remember, I kept saying things like, don't worry about that. I got it. Yeah. I got you. Yeah.
Well,
you know.
Well, Vonnie comes with a lot of experience and a lot of confidence, and she inspires that into the cast, you know, because many of us don't have formal acting right. capabilities of her, other than acting silly. I mean, I'm great at that.
They're all great actors.
Yeah. So she kind of forced the cast to kind of come out of their comfort zone and explore who they are.
Nice to have that direction, though, right? It's like
it
who you are, yeah.
Yeah.
So the play is divided into four acts. Let's talk through the themes and events explored in each act. Act one, 1491. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
We have a lovely scene that we open up with that is, you know, pre-contact. Yeah. And it also involves, you know, we have different realms of existence. We have the little people, we have us, and then we have the big people. And one of our most revered large people is Mashop. We hear a lot about Mashop here in this area. And so Mashop makes an appearance and shares, you know, in storytelling. That, you know, shows a little bit of the joy and the humor, and but also the lessons that are in our stories. And, you know, there is an opening where there is fear and concern about the future, anxiety, sort of like a premonition, mm-hmm. if you will. We have a seer who is having a time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And through that, we... you know, we lay the foundation for the story. Right. And, you know, Mashop's prophecy happens. And there's just a feeling of what it was like, you know, waking up in the morning. We start at sunrise. And then the play goes through history, but it really is going through one full day. Mm. And it is like walking, observing how it is to walk a day as a Wampanoag person. You are confronted with contemporary society, but you have knowledge, you have elders who are constantly reminding you of your history yeah. and why your existence is important. And so that's really in that first scene. Yeah.
All right, Act Two, 1650s, the Christianization and pandemic, right?
Yeah,
then we tell us about that.
Then we transition into the impacts mm-hmm. of you know the forced integration, the forced migration, all of the forced Christianization of our people. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Act Three, 1833, the Woodlot Riot.
Woodlot Riot.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's resistance holding on to who we are. How much can a people take and still hold on to what's important to you as a people, and the human aspect of resistance and it's the kind of current.
Yes. And then Act Four, 1970 to 2023, the land suit.
Sure. In Mashpee, the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe sued the town to get land back. This was sort of my first experience with land back and what that means. And so when we were doing a lot of the dramaturgical information, you know, bringing things in for, you know, the group to study about 1833 or to study about the 1600s, once we got to this point, we just could look to our left and look to our right. And there were individuals, you know, who were here yeah. and who lived through that time.
Yeah. That must have been interesting too, right? Because it's in some ways you're kind of reliving that history that you've been through, where some yes. of that early history, obviously, you know, we weren't around for that.
Right.
So that must have been an interesting experience, even before. I mean, within the play, but also just kind of in the rehearsals and things like that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's when I was really trying to scribe everything that was happening in the rehearsal room, because you know we would have historians in the room brilliant minds that, you know, just hold our history.
Right.
And they would say things just so casually. And I'm just like, wait a minute, what did you say?
Write that down. We're talking about We Are the Land, a community devised play that shares the Wampanoag experience through story, dance, and spoken word. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about We Are the Land, a community devised play that shares the Wampanoag experience through story, dance, and spoken word. We're with Siobhan Brown, citizen of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe and director of We Are the Land, and Troy Kurtz, citizen of Herring Pond Wampanoag. Talk a little bit about how song and dance are used in this performance.
Well, Troy's a great singer. You take it away.
Well, I don't know if I'm a great singer. I just do the best I can. Sometimes words don't do things justice of describing things, and song does, and dance does, and movement. I think Vani mentioned that, and that's important to us. And it's important to have a body and to move those, your parts for beings who cannot move anymore, or someone who's having a difficult time and can no longer walk. So you have those movements, and those are a significant part of our culture and who we are.
Also, it's so emotional, right? It really stirs emotion. Song,
it does.
Right?
It does.
Yeah.
The melody and the vibration, it gets you going. For me, the song at the end, how we wrap it up, to me, is very powerful. It's like a coming, like a connector of the circle, mm-hmm. somewhat, to come to the front. And it's kind of like symbolizes a little bit of one of our traditional stomp dances, mm-hmm. but it's slightly different. And the harmonies and I can't even really explain it. You'd have to see it, to be honest with
right.
you.
And hopefully many people will, right?
Yes.
All right, so We Are the Land was first performed in Plymouth, UK. Explain how that came to be and the experience of making the trip and performing in England.
Sure. I think that was what the early efforts were. Initially it was to be a much larger production, many, many more people. And I think that this may have been a practice at Theatre Royal Plymouth, that they would do, mm-hmm. Community shows like this. And so those initial rehearsals before I came on board, folks came over here. There were workshops. There was a writer. Mm-hmm. They were a non-native person, and they wrote the play. It's a script, and people, our tribal members just had to pause mm-hmm. and say, this is kind of like history repeating itself. You know, we should be able to write our own play.
Absolutely.
And so, I think that's kind of the evolution, that those relationships were still there, but there was a desire to shift. And of course, it was supported by, a pandemic mm-hmm. happening, right?
Oh,
and everything
getting
canceled, right? Yeah. But those, particularly... the staff at Theatre Royal Plymouth, shout out to them. They wanted to uphold their, agreement that mm-hmm. they wanted to work with us and mm-hmm. to continue mm-hmm. to do it and to support us to be able to do that. And so that's, when I came on board, Michelle St. John came on board at that point, folks who were, interested in a process that would meet that request, which was, let's write our own story.
Have our voices kind of lead. How can you have a native thing going where it's written by a non-native person,
right?
And we're standing right here when we took more of a lead thing with it. And luckily we had Vani.
Yeah.
So, and the others.
The rest of the team.
Yes.
Was the performance received in the UK? And were there any standout moments or audience reactions that you want to share?
I mean, that theater, I can't remember how many it holds, but they were talking about initially, it's a state-of-the-art theater, and the roof, the ceiling of it can cover, it has like three or four balconies.
It was huge.
And it can drop down, and they were, Siobhan, do you think, the cast might be a little intimidated? Should we raise the ceiling? And I was just like, you've been to Mashpee, right?
Yeah.
You've met the cast. You give us a task, we're going to give our very, very best. And so I was like, don't bother with that. And of course, they sold out. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of PR. There was actually a full week takeover.
Yeah.
They call it the Wampanoag takeover. So we did the show. We got there. We rehearsed. We had far too little tech time. And then we did the show on Sunday. And, you know, every day of that week, there was a Wampanoag-centered event. Mm-hmm. Hartman Dietz gave a talk on colonization. Paula Peters showed her film, The Mashpee Nine. You know, there was the Wampanoag Nation singers and dancers gave a performance. And so there, and the lobby was filled with information and history. So I was in the audience for the show. And, you know, everything was going so well, so beautifully. And there was one point, I think it was during the land suit, where Judge Skinner, at the end of his verdict, says, you know, to the Wampanoag people in the courtroom, you know, you can have your land for any other means, but you know the consequence is too great for us to turn this over to you. You can be Wampanoag on this land all you want, but you're not going to get it back. Mm-hmm. And in front of me were a couple of friends, you know, who were laughing and enjoying the play. But one of them just swiftly turned her head and looked at her partner. And she had to stand up. She had to get up and, like, you know, lean up against the wall to watch the rest of the play. And the end of the play is very, very moving. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of personal statements and personal experiences shared at the end as it connects to all of the history we've just seen. And in the UK, there wasn't a dry eye in my row.
Wow.
And, you know, standing ovation, you know, thunderous applause. And it was very, very moving and fulfilling. It was worth the trip.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah. Now, We Are the Land was performed at the Majestic Theater in Boston, which is part of Emerson College. Arts Emerson created an audience guide for the performance. Mm-hmm. Talk about the collaboration with Emerson and why the audience guide was developed.
Sure. Shout out to the staff at Arts Emerson. They're really...
They were great. They were
doing
great.
Doing the work. Yeah. You know, all of the needed changes for theater are baked in at mm-hmm. Arts Emerson. You know, they are known for bringing in work from around the globe. But they partnered with Theatre Royal Plymouth and decided to sort of do that co-partnership.
A lot of great collaboration there. It made it easier to have it in Plymouth, and then the way Emerson handled it back over here, I mean, it seemed seamless. It was really well done.
Yes.
And so was there a similar audience guide for the UK performance or no?
The UK performance did have... you know, a guide or a book that also included all of the takeover work. So when we were at the Majestic, it was two performances prior to. They usually, this is a common practice for them to engage audiences before, during, and after.
I love that
their
idea.
Performance. Yeah. Yes. So folks even come together and read the script together mm-hmm. beforehand. There are different, you know, audience engagement practices that they do. And the guide, I did work with the writer for it and just talked through all of the different points in history that we were touching on in the play. That framework was put together by Hartman. And so we were able to just sort of unpack it a little more. Just so that the questions or if this history is new information, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of this is not taught in
Correct.
Public school education.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that really served that need.
Yeah. Boston and Cape Cod, of course, are the ancestral homelands of the Wampanoag people. And those of us living here today are walking on the very ground where this history took place. Did performing the play in Boston feel different than performing it in the UK? And was there a different reaction or energy with the audience in the US versus Plymouth, England?
I think in Plymouth, England, they really don't, you know, once the people left there and came here, they were no longer English. So to them, that was totally new information to them. So mm-hmm. that was like a clean slate to them. Whereas in Massachusetts, Boston, they have an idea of, well, not always correct, obviously, mystical
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
But I wanted to laugh because I have a line where not even, you know, we have a reference to people in Boston in the play. And it was kind of funny when I had to say that in Boston, you know, and get the point like, hey, we are here in Boston right now. I don't want to give the line away, yeah, right. but it was different. It was different.
Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, you know, there's no place like home, right?
Right.
So,
right.
so you know, I think overseas, you know, I know I did. I don't know about the rest of the cast, but I heard a lot of, you know, apologies and things, and you know,
yeah.
which
yeah.
was interesting.
Yeah.
There seemed to be, you know, a lot of receiving energy around receiving new information mm-hmm. overseas. There was some of that in Boston, but the audience for Arts Emerson and for that area of the theater in general, you know, Boston is supposed to be, you know, the Athens of America, right? This is supposed to be the cultural hub mm-hmm. and everything. But, you know, the lack of indigenous theater in Boston is palpable, mm-hmm. right? It's
yeah.
very few and far between. And there are artists who are coming to the community. But there are artists who are already right here,
mm-hmm.
right? There are theaters that are partnering with indigenous artists who are, you know, from other parts of Turtle Island. But we are right here and with wealth of talent to tell our stories.
Boy, does this like work right into my next question, which is we have been fortunate to have members of the Herringbone, Aquinnah, and Mashpee Wampanoag tribes on our airways. And one phrase that is repeated frequently by tribal citizens is, we are still here.
Nikki's.
Yeah.
We do, you know, who do you hope people, you know, what do you consider that they think deeply about that when you say we are still here? Because there are people who are surprised. They go, wait, what?
Yeah.
There are Native Americans
yeah.
here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they
which is shocking.
And they have an image of like TV.
Right.
And then when they see us, they're like, well, you guys don't look like characters on TV. We're
mm-hmm.
like, well, no.
We're not.
Well, you're an average person that walk right by in the street.
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's something that I hope folks will take away from the play, that we are walking, you know, in two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
We have our indigenous ancestry and our knowledge and our language and our ways. And then we have to move in a contemporary world. I think that, you know, I hope comes through because we have an intergenerational cast.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how folks, you know, take that away will be interesting, you know, here at
yeah.
home.
Gives people a lot to think about.
Yeah, because we live in a vacation hotspot.
Right? Yeah. No,
and people
sure.
come here and yeah. they know nothing
they,
about
right.
the land
they
under
know
their
nothing.
Feet.
Right.
They
right.
don't know that there's an indigenous population here
mm-hmm.
and that we are still here. Part of reclaiming is part of that deep listening that we're talking
mm-hmm.
about that's in the process. You know, you're seeing language being reclaimed. You're seeing land being reclaimed. You're seeing identity being reclaimed, and it's a beautiful and deep spiritual thing that happens, particularly in the arts,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we can express ourselves in our language, with our songs, with our dances, and we can do it in a way that is a blend of power. We're not in power over, we're not in power under, we're in power with
mm-hmm.
one another
mm-hmm.
to share our voice with the audience. And that, there's nothing more indigenous than that.
Right.
And
yeah.
so the Wampanoag way, you know, we are part of so many different challenging, you know, myths and stories, the biggest one being, you know, the Thanksgiving myth.
Right.
You know, yeah. and but there's so much more to us.
Right.
You know, and I hope that that's what this play conveys, because we're only touching on a handful of our history that's pertinent to us here in this location.
All right, let's jump ahead. 15, 20 years, you've been asked to write or perform in Act 5, We Are the Land, 2025 to 2045, let's say. What positive changes, perceptions, or events would you hope will have happened to shape that next act?
Ooh, that's a hard
mm-hmm.
question.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I like ceremonies. I like tradition. I like culture. I like the coming together of people. I like how it brings us together as the remnants of the nation that was left behind, that we are still here and that we share these relationships and kingships amongst one another, be it language, songs, that we have that closeness, that's how we did before pre-contact, and that we're still present. And that other people realize that we're human. It's not this romanticized thing of Thanksgiving or different things. Like we sweat blood and tears like everybody else. And we do walk in two different worlds. And, you know, we don't have the obligation of just having one view on the world. We have to stand on who we are, and we have to strengthen who we are through obligation for the next people coming behind us. I mean, I guess people have a choice. In my opinion, we don't, because we have to leave that space that we look to each other to create for the seven generations behind us, and not just for us, but for the people who, you know, non-Native people who we share Turtle Island with. It's all important, and it's all impacted. And I think with this, learning our teachings and who we are, it helps us share that common goal of humanity.
You want to add anything to that, Shalom?
Yeah. I mean, I would just add that, you know, colonization impacts everyone.
Yeah.
And it is my hope that, you know, an Act 5 would be about healing and how, you know, these efforts that are, you know, starting now have reached a fulfillment. You know, it is my hope that we have language fluency, that we have fully returned language home. It is my hope that we have, you know, knowledge and awareness that we are still here, and that our children know who they are, and that we have land back, that we have indigenous knowledge systems in policy and in place, so that our waters are not contaminated,
and our air,
and that we are not, you know, on this decline with the climate crisis. You know, all of these things that face us as a result of the attempt of genocide of indigenous people is, some sort of turning around and a place of acceptance and healing.
Yeah. We Are the Land is a community devised play that shares the Wampanoag experience through story, dance, and spoken word. It will be performed at the Tilden Arts Center at Cape Cod Community College April 30th and May 1st at 7:30 p.m. We'll post more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Siobhan Brown, citizen of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe and director of We Are the Land, and Troy Curran, citizen of Herring Pond Wampanoag. Thank you so much for being with us and for bringing the play.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And we look forward to seeing everyone at the theater.
That's right. Get your tickets.
The music taking us into the break is Ascension by Jennifer Kreisberg, performed by the cast of We Are the Land. Coming up, we talk with naturalist and Cape Cod Notebook contributor Dennis Minsky about his new collection of essays.